Hi, today is November 16, 2016. This is Mobile News Podcast number 183. This is the post-election podcast. I'm Todd Agosa-Ward and my good friend John Westfall, and we're still all here.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, we don't see red or blue in this podcast. We see white
Except
and black.
Except for iPhone cases.
Well, yeah. We see white and black because those are the colors of the rundown, you know, white background and black text on it.
And
some underlying links, but you know,
that's, hyperlinks. Until you click them, then they become red.
Yeah, exactly. So I noticed none of mine are clicked this week, but we could just do some for some equality. Yeah, this is probably one of the more apolitical podcasts that's going to be put out over the next few days.
Or four years,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll try to stay politically neutral in the podcast.
No, neither candidate said that they were going to, you know, limit innovation in mobile technology. So
nope. Yeah. Nobody said anything about mobile technology.
Yeah, exactly. The only candidate that said anything about technology really was John McAfee. And
I forgot about him.
Yeah, he didn't make it past the Libertarian primaries. So, yeah. Poor McAfee. He just... We're all going to be hacked by someone, and we'll be hacking other people. So, you know, goes around, comes around.
Okay, so a couple of small items this week. Nothing really big tech-wise, I think. A couple of things caught our attention. One, didn't catch John's attention. He's not an Android user at the moment. But Google released Android Auto for Android 5.0 phones or later. I installed it on mine, even though I don't use mine in the car because I don't have a car. I don't have a phone holder that works anymore. I guess I should go look for one. But basically, it creates a nice big UI that you can touch, presumably without holding it. So, you know, if that's something, if you use your Android phone in the car, you know, here you go. It's free. Android Auto from Google. Android 5.0 or above, so you need a relatively recent vintage phone, 2 years or newer.
And if you don't like the idea of something free, I, just as you were talking, mm-hmm. thought of an ad I watched last night for this product called the NavD.
Okay.
Which is a heads-up display that you put in your car.
Oh.
And I watched the ad and I thought, you know what, that's pretty cool. I could, you know, my car doesn't have a heads-up display and it
right.
connects with your smartphone and,
right.
you know, it's got Google Maps built into it and, you know, integrates with your car's OBD2 system so it knows the speed and all that. I thought, you know what, I might be interested in picking one of those up. It looks kind of cool.
Even though you walk 5 minutes to work.
Yeah, exactly. And then I saw that it wasn't something that I thought would be, yeah, I thought this would be priced in the $200, yeah. $300 range. It is in the $800 range.
Wow.
And so it's interesting to me how Android Auto and CarPlay and all of that, it's kind of, okay, leverage the stuff you already have, but there are still options out there if you don't have a dog in the race to go out and get a really expensive thing like that. So.
Yeah, well, it's NAVDY.com, mm-hmm. NAVD. If you're interested, it's $800 American, so it's not cheap.
Oh, yeah.
But so what does it do? Does it literally display in your windshield or?
Yep, it displays up on your windshield, and they bill it as it connects to your phone, but it has full Google Map database built into it and a few other things so that if you lose cellular connection, you still have navigation.
Okay, now with a caveat that neither John nor I claim any legal expertise whatsoever, you might want to check your local driving laws to see if it's legal to use this in your location. I'm thinking that, you know, having a video projection on your screen might be frowned upon by some areas. I don't know that for sure, but...
Well, I don't know. There are some cars that have heads-up display still. I mean, it was really popular in, you know, the 90s.
I think Corvette had
yeah.
one, yeah.
But I still see it as an option on somewhere new. I mean, my car is on 2004, so I'm not really at the peak of technology right now. You know, that was actually honestly what I thought when I saw the price on this thing. I thought, you know what? My car is a 2004. It's got 205,000 miles on it. I'll just buy a new car. And I'll get a host of new features that I don't have right now. Because, I'm living in the past. But yeah, it was something cool. It was one of the few ads. So you have YouTube Red because it comes with your Google Music subscription.
Yes, that's correct.
And you talk about how great it is, but you know what? I wouldn't have known this overpriced product existed if I hadn't watched an ad on YouTube.
Is that right? That's where you discovered it?
Yep, that's where I found it. Right before.
That's pretty funny.
So I'm actually missing something
by paying for YouTube Red.
You are. You're out of touch with the populace, Todd.
Oh, gosh.
You don't know what's going on with the rest
elitist.
Of Yes, yeah. You might be.
Okay. The next item is from Google, but John might find it interesting because it's Gmail and Google Calendar for iOS have been enhanced. Again, free and all of that. So, you know, if you want to go check it out, it works on both the iPad and iPhone. You can undo, send. Search is supposed to be... It's just supposed to be generally faster. And I think I've complained to John about, for me at least, the Gmail app was just way too slow.
Yeah, and I'm playing with the new app right now. This is the first time I've fired it up. And it's got that really big Google UI that they basically... Google just doesn't like Apple's standards for anything. And so they make it back into its own in their own image. And I honestly... I'm just trying to find my regular inbox right now, and I'm having a hard time
doing
that.
Do you use Google Gmail for your Google Mail, or do you use Google Inbox app?
I use Gmail.
Okay, because I know Frank is a big fan of Inbox, as I recall, our buddy Frank McPherson.
Well, Frank's also a fan of the Cubs, too, and I'm not too keen on them these days either. So, you know.
To each his own.
To each their own, yeah, but... You know, honestly, the Gmail app is always installed on my phone because the search on it works better than the search in MS Outlook on the phone. But, it's not something I open regularly because it's just too freaking slow. Even, I think, with this update, it's probably too slow.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit – I have to say it's noticeably faster. I don't know if it's fast enough for me to use on a regular basis, but I'm going to take a look at it. And it's something I don't use at all. It's the Google Calendar app for iOS. And they claim that it, too, is, faster. But more importantly, you can do a month and week view in landscape mode, which since I don't use it, I didn't realize you couldn't do that. But that's pretty important, you know, if you have a nice big
neither.
Screen.
I used to use Google Calendar for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started a new additional position in May of last year where I actually had staff that needed to know my calendar. And so I thought, well, and so that I switched everything over to Exchange kind of unwillingly. But so the problem with an Exchange server, and we're still a hosted Exchange system, even though I think there are plans to move us to Office 365, is that there's no easy way to integrate with a hosted Exchange server. So I do kind of miss that everything could connect with Google Calendar. And remember, there used to be all those products and sync platforms that would synchronize your Gmail and your Exchange calendars and all that.
Right.
And you kind of lost those back around 2008, 2009. I kind of wish I'd pay a dollar or two a month to be able to synchronize my Google Calendar with my Exchange calendar at work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a problem. I have a dual calendar also. Almost everything is in Google Calendar. But I do have a work calendar, which I have to duplicate since, you know, it won't alert me on my phone because I don't want to put the app on. It's my personal phone. It's not a work phone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't want them to control my profile, you know, or my policies, I should say.
Yeah.
So
I've never really thought about this, but I think if you actually – so on iOS, if you just keep your work profile in Microsoft Outlook, then I don't think the Exchange server gets full policy access because Outlook can't wipe the phone the way that the built-in mail app could because it's integrated there. So that's one way if you wanted to have your work email and everything on a kind of sandboxed environment on iOS. There are mail clients for Gmail that I believe, or for Android that do the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's a valid point. I just thought, I really wonder, I have a home Mac server over here that I have the policies installed on my devices, mostly so that if I need to, I can push out like VPN configuration changes and things like that to all my devices at once. But I wonder whose policies reign supreme, if mine or theirs.
Right. And if you follow the rules, so to speak, and you put these work app on your personal device, and by personal I mean something you've purchased yourself. Some enterprises require you to set your phone to point to their policy server, and thereby they, you know, then they control you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it depends, right? It depends how much control the entity you have wants to have, to the point of, you know, making you point your personal device to their policy server.
Well, you and I are both lucky in that technically, even though you work in a more direct connection, we both work for our state governments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And governments don't tend to care so much about policies, even though they really should, compared to some
business. As somebody found out.
Yeah, I have found out and noticed, and I think you have found out as well, that the government doesn't exactly keep good technology tabs on things.
No.
To the extent that I'm pretty sure there are like Fortune 3000 companies out there that have better policy settings for email retention and compliance and all that than the government does.
Especially if they contract through the company that our good friend Don Cercinelli works for, right? I mean, he's our mobile enterprise guru. But but in any case. So there you go. If you're an iOS user and you use Gmail and the Google Calendar app, and I do use Google Calendar for maintain all my personal stuff, and I just have it synced to my iOS calendar. So that's the reason why, even though I use Google Calendar as a master list, so to speak, I don't have the actual app on my device because I don't really need it. And Apple's calendar app is not perfect. And I've tried the various and sundry third-party ones that people rave about, and I don't know. I just go back to the simplest one.
I have always, for the last 2 years, I've really liked Fantastical on iOS, and so that's the calendar that I use. I've thought about switching to BusyCal, just because BusyCal on the desktop, at least, actually has some fairly unique features to interface with reminders in iOS, or not iOS, but macOS. Mm-hmm. Apple, when they overhauled their Reminders app a few years ago, took away a lot of features that are still in Apple Reminders. They're just by default not displayed. So BusyCal connects up to the CalDAV server that controls Apple Reminders and can let you do some cool stuff there. But I haven't needed that functionality just yet. So Fantastical is the calendar app I use on both macOS and iOS.
Right. Okay, and now on to something I've been whining about for several months, and I should stop whining.
As soon as you stop caring, it'll come out.
the Acer Chromebook R13 that I've been waiting for, which is the touchscreen kind of hybrid device, a Chromebook device that can run the beta version of the Android App Store on it. Yeah, it looks like it's widely available, and by widely available, I mean you can buy it through Amazon. And the good news is that the $399 start price that I've been quoting for the low end for 16 gigabyte of storage, apparently if you buy through Amazon, there's a 32 gigabyte model for $399. So that's a pretty good deal, unless Acer just sort of got rid of the 16 gigabyte version and just started, you know, just repriced it. Don't know, but I confirmed it with folks who bought it from Amazon that for $399 you do get the 32 gigabyte version. I still haven't pulled the trigger because I kind of hoped Google would have the production Chrome OS ready for these Chromebooks that supported the App Store. You can run the beta on it. So that's not a problem. People do. I don't know. I might buy it. But anyway, that leads into something that I did want to talk about that people have been whining about that I'm not whining about, which is a nice change of pace. And that is, people are whining that if you have a Chromebook with a display that's 10.1 inches or larger, as the R13 is with 13-inch, you will need an Office 365 subscription to run Office for Android on it in edit mode. Otherwise, you just get view-only mode. This should not be a shock to anybody. Because this is the way it's always been, as far as I know. At least, maybe not always, but it's been for the last several years. Including, I guess the iPad Pro, you need an Office 365 license because it's larger than 10.1 inches, whereas the normal iPad is 9.7, so you don't. It's been that way for netbooks and the ultralights, most of which are 10.1 inches or larger, you know, that run Windows 10, by the way, not even something else. And it's been that way for Android tablets, so I'm not sure why people are shocked by this development.
Well, you know, for some reason, I think it's just status quo. These people remember that it was free. They don't really know why it's not free anymore. And it's just one of those frustrations of life that they're dealing with. It is more and more as we get away from when Microsoft released that policy. It's starting to seem much more dated to even have that policy. So it's very arbitrary too. You know, 9.7 to 10.3, that's where the magic cutoff is between a play device and a work device, or whatever you want to call it.
Between an amateur and a pro device, how's that?
Exactly. I think that Microsoft might want to reevaluate that.
Yeah. Now, that said, you know, I was one of the people who got a free one-year subscription to Office 365 Personal, you know, the one with one license. Because mm-hmm. I have a Microsoft OneDrive account that had more than X gigabytes, and I put in, you know, I signed up, said, hey, for my inconvenience of being annoyed by your changing policies, they were nice and, well, I mean, you know, they didn't have to. It was good enough that it restored my storage. But, you know, it's free. It's not like I'm paying stuff for OneDrive. But they offered us a one-year license for Office 365, which I think I activated mine maybe last spring in March or April. So I've got about 6 months left of the subscription. I have to decide if I'm going to actually resubscribe when it turns off sometime next spring. But, you know, it's funny. I'm trying to remember how many times I've used Microsoft Office on my home device. And since I got that free license, I can think of maybe once.
mm-hmm.
So it's not something I use. Now, at work, I use Office 365 every day. But at home, I just have no need for it. I mean, Google Docs and other things are just fine.
Yeah. For me. It's an interesting thing. I'm going to be very interested next year when my organization does move to Office 365, because it's going to be interesting to have a corporate cloud plus a personal cloud plus other corporate cloud. You know, I've got with various groups I work with probably two or three Office 365 accounts in some way or another. So I'm going to be curious to see how Microsoft, remember back in the day, was the group that actually let you switch between accounts so easily, and then they took that feature away.
Yeah.
So I'll be curious to see how Microsoft continues to build out the Office 365 platform, as I think more and more people are going to be getting on it in some way or another, whether they're paying individually or they're in a company that's paying for it.
Yeah. Now, this is something that I thought it was an Amazon thing, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, John. You have in our show notes something about the NES Classic.
So the NES Classic, the thing that I just found very interesting about it was that so many people are interested in it. I mean, this is a little tiny, old-looking Nintendo entertainment system. So it looks like it came out in 1986, although it's smaller. It has 30 games built in, all the classic games that you would expect. It comes with a controller. It's a full-size controller. And it has HDMI out, which obviously is going to make it a lot easier to connect to modern-day televisions than the 1986 NES. And I don't think you have to blow in it quite so much to, you know, get the game to work. But that being said, if you are a gamer and you are a retro gaming nut, it is not very hard to set up an emulator. It is not very hard to find ROMs. Of course, we all legally own the ROMs we have. We're not going to get into that discussion.
Of course.
But if you are looking for these things, and of course, a Bluetooth controller that you can map out to be an NES controller, you can actually buy a Bluetooth NES-looking controller on Amazon for less than an NES Classic. So it's nostalgia, I think, that is driving NES Classic sales, and that's fine. But if this holiday season someone says to you, I need an NES Classic because it's the only way I can play NES games, you might want to remind them that there are other ways that one can play those games.
Yeah. Now just to clarify, so this is not like an old device that was somehow they found a statue. This is like a new device that plays the old games, right?
Yeah, it is a new device that
and apparently
has come out.
Amazon sold it out in literally a minute.
Yeah. Oh, there are people I saw that were going absolutely crazy to try to get an NES Classic when it was released either yesterday or the day before.
Do you know how much it cost? I assume it wasn't too expensive.
It wasn't. Let me see if I can still find the product page on Amazon.
I just looked at Amazon. They just said currently unavailable, no price.
Yeah. It doesn't say, but it wasn't horribly expensive, if I remember correctly. But, geez, it only has a 1.5-star rating on Amazon right now.
I think it's because people were upset it's not available. They're giving it 1 star.
Well, that could be it. Yeah. Some people, they can't understand that the quality of something doesn't have anything to do with if it's available or not. But, right. You know.
Well, it has no quality if it's not available.
That's true. It's a very bad product if you can't even get to it.
Okay, well, you know, it's funny. Well, game-wise, the only game I really love to play, I have to say, years and years and years, is the classic Sid Meier Civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again because I like to complain, as you know. So I would say I play that probably at least a couple times a week, usually on weekends. But the interesting thing to me was, and it was originally available, there is a Civilization Revolution 2 for iOS, which is terrible. I bought it, mm-hmm. and I never played it. I played it after like 2 or 3 attempts. But the original Civilization Revolution, Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution for iOS, was available for both the iPad and iPhone. In fact, it was available for the iPhone first. But now if you go to the store, you can still buy or download if you already bought it for your iPad, but you can't download it for your iPhone.
Yeah, I've had a few games like that that have done that as well, where you've got something that looks like it's going to be around for a while, and then they just take it off sale for some reason. Yeah. So.
And the weird thing is, I don't own it, but I bought a license for it, and I'd like to execute that license on my new iPhone, but I can't do it. I guess I could go look for the installer on my iMac, but I'm too lazy.
Well, you know, that's life today with technology. Sometimes we can overcome it. We're just too lazy to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want my new segment that I am thinking about introducing?
Yes, please.
So this week I was teaching a class, as I am wont to do, because it's my job. And my students somehow, I had ruined something for them. I'd give them an article that showed that something they had faith in, they shouldn't have as much faith in, and but at some point they start asking me, what other things can you ruin? And somehow the company LifeLock came up, and I pointed out that the owner, the CEO of LifeLock's identity was stolen 13 times when he had his social security number painted on the sides of buses. Yeah.
That was not the smartest thing to do.
Yeah, it wasn't. And they, of course, looked at me and said, how do you know this stuff? And I said, well, you know, I'm a professor. I'm supposed to know useless information. So this week, as we were looking for, as we were building the show notes, I came up with a classic tech tale that I don't think we've ever covered on here. It came out a few years ago, and I remember reading it at the time. But it is just, in a world where we desperately need some humor and irony at this point, I think, post-election, because even if your candidate won, you're probably exhausted. This was one of my favorite classic tech tales, and that is, if you remember, about 6, 7 years ago now, 8 years ago, there was an ad that was on DVDs that you would purchase that was an anti-piracy ad, and it was well known as the "you wouldn't steal a car" ad. Equated pirating a DVD to stealing a car. I guess that's the same thing. I'm not quite sure, but whatever. And they used this kind of rather pumping backbeat music. And it turns out that that music was written for an anti-piracy event at a film festival in Europe in around 2006. And it was only licensed to be used at that event and nowhere else. And the creator of that music, the copyright owner, happened to purchase a DVD the following year and hear his music behind an anti-piracy ad. And at that point, the music had been pirated because there was no legal usage rights for him. So not only does he goes through the appropriate channels, he files a grievance about this and doesn't hear anything for a few years. And then the company.
Years?
Yeah, wow. Years. And then the music distribution company that he had gone through, or the publishing company, a guy contacted him, one of the employees of the company, and said, you know, this, I can probably push this through for you. How about I just buy the rights to the music off of you wholesale, and then I'll give you 2/3 of the royalties that I'm able to negotiate for the music. And so basically, this guy was being extorted by the company that's supposed to protect his publishing rights. So not only has his stuff been pirated at this point, the protectors that are supposed to go after the people who pirate your stuff are turning on him. He recorded the conversation that he had with this gentleman, and in the end, he was able to come out ahead. But it's just a very ironic and somewhat interesting tale that broke about 3 years ago now, so we're not breaking this news story. But it is very fitting that the anti-piracy ad that equated stealing a car to ripping a DVD stole the music that it was using.
Okay, I like this segment. We need more useless information in this world. Useless but interesting.
Yeah, well, that was the thing that my students commented on, was the fact that I have useless information, but it all fits back somehow to what we're talking about at that point. So that was the highest compliment I ever got from a student years ago. Was so that
it's not useless.
He tells a lot of stories, but they all actually have something to do with what we're talking about. So apparently my tangents aren't that tangential.
Very good, Professor Westfall. We're all proud of you.
Well, you know, I might have a PhD, but you do have a master's degree, so you can rightfully be Master Ogasawara.
All righty. Okay, so kind of a short podcast. Not a lot of stuff that was interesting. I think something else was going on. I'm not exactly sure.
There was something about some guy and some woman that were trying to get a job. And
there's some everyone email involved. I don't know what went on.
And it went the other way, and now apparently just no one's happy about it.
Yeah, but it wasn't technologically involved enough to
nothing to do
catch
with
more
tech.
Attention. So
we are not talking about it.
We ignored it, more or less. All right, we'll be back. Hopefully we'll have some guests in the near future. Some of our friends return, some new, not new friends, but old friends that are new to the podcast. We'll see who we can grab. And in any case, this has been podcast number 183, and we'll talk to you next time.